Kailara woke slowly, rising gradually through layers of thought and memory, and finally opened her eyes to see that she had, in fact, slept through the rest of second and all of third shift. She stretched, feeling a little stiff, but really rested for the first time in, well, since she'd come back to the ship the day the Ansibles were attacked. She rolled out of her bunk, showered, dressed, and came out into the corridor, where the smell of cooking food drew her to the galley. Garlan was cooking breakfast.
Captain, you're up!
Finally! You must have wondered if I'd sleep forever.
Well, you look better. What do you want for breakfast?
Whatever that is, make some more of it. It smells like exactly what I want.
Oh, sure. Eggs and sausage, easy enough.
Kai ate a full plate of eggs, sausage, potatoes, a slice of fresh melon. She wondered what that had done to the budget, and considered her schedule. She still had to get that machinery back to the station and aboard, locate the parts, have them installed, find out how to get the right ship chip installed in the beacon, get Lee transferred to the Katrine Lamont, see if ISC had any bandwidth for commercial messages yet, so that she could let Belinta know their tractors were, in fact, coming. Oh, and the mail from home. With the clarity of a full night's sleep, she remembered that she was not supposed to put in an implant without a neuro evaluation, with the recommendation that it not be done for 6 months, so she didn't have to decide right away whether or not to put in the implant her father had sent. When she came onto the bridge, Lee nodded to her.
Quincy's put a stack of things on your desk, Comp. You'll need to sign off on the orders. It looks good, Captain. She found a supplier for everything we need. There's not a current opening in any of the good refitting yards, but she says we can install the sealed units ourselves. In-system drives fuel prices up, but not impossibly high. She says everyone's being cooperative, so we should hurry up and get out before they change their attitude.
Good.
Kai opened her desk. Sealed unit for FTL, yes. New liner to replace the old cavitation-damaged one. Replacement for communications transmitter. Upgrade for scan. She hadn't asked for that, but she would like it if they could afford it. Beacon repair. Replacement ship chip. Unavailable. The explanation made sense, though it was a pain. Under UCC regulations, no two ships could have the same identifier chip. Glennis Jones' original chip couldn't be turned in for a new chip because it was somewhere in space, probably still in Payson's pocket. Never mind that no one was going to find that chip. It had not been turned in, so a chip identifying the ship as Glennis Jones could not be issued, even with a replacement registration number. The Universal Commercial Code had very strict requirements. Slaughter Key and Sabine Prime were both signatories to the agreements. The ship would have to be re-registered, most easily as out of Sabine Prime, with some difficulty out of Slaughter Key, if the Slaughter Key Embassy would cooperate. All Vada ships carried Slaughter Key registry. Kai put in a call to the Slaughter Key Embassy, but it was nighttime there, and it would be hours before the consul saw it.
And what'll I do if he refuses the request? What if Captain Furman got to him first?
And there was the matter of what she should name the ship. Certainly not Mist Harbor. Finding a unique ship name wasn't easy. The first 8 or 10 she tried in the database came up with the notation unavailable, in service. Kai wondered if it was even worth registering a ship that was going to be scrapped anyway. But it was not going to be scrapped anyway. And finally, she thought of a name that no one would have used yet, a name she wanted to honor. She called Quincy on the intercom.
What?
We need a new ship name. What about the Gary Tobai?
That would do. Yeah, he'd like that.
Kai entered it in the database, and as she expected, found no match. She put a reserve tag on it with a 3-day permit. Surely she'd hear in 3 days, and she could renew the hold if she had to. 2 hours into day shift for the Slaughter Key Embassy, and well into second shift for Kai, she heard from the consul.
I hear you lost one of those people we sent you.
He disobeyed orders and did something stupid.
Why am I not surprised? The young blonde one, right?
Yes.
Well, you need to fill out some forms for us. The embassy has to report all injuries and deaths of Slaughter Key citizens for the DNA report. I'll have those sent up to you. What about funeral arrangements?
He didn't have anything on file with us, but one of the others told me he was a Modulan, so I thought we'd combine his service with the one for one of the other crew.
Sounds good. I'll notify the family that services were held. What date?
Kai looked at the calendar and answered in terms of the local calendar.
You'll be in attendance?
Of course.
Good. I'll tell them services were held with the captain in attendance. Remains?
I have no idea. I was unconscious and in surgery at the time the remains were disposed of.
Good enough. The rest of the forms are coming up shortly. Now what else?
I have to re-register the ship. Vada ships all carry Slaughter Key Registry. Can we do that?
We could, if your senior captain in system, Captain Furman, hadn't told me that your ship was up for scrap, and Vada would not sanction an off-world licensing fee.
And how much would that be?
You're not going to like the answer.
Which is?
It's not worth it, really. 250,000 credits for a ship of that mass. You can get a perfectly viable Sabine registration for 100,000. It would be 50,000 if you were a Sabine citizen. We charge that much for out-of-system registration just to discourage people.
Kai found her jaw on the floor and yanked it back up with an effort.
250,000 for a ship chip and a piece of paper?
And the honor of the Slaughter Key government. Yes. I said it wasn't worth it.
It's ridiculous. It's outrageous.
Yes, it is, but it's what I have on my list, so it's what I have to do. So let me know what you want.
Kai had no idea what reputation Sabine Prime ships had in the universe. She'd already discovered that Slaughter Key might be a liability. Still, Slaughter Key was her planet and her government, and she felt uneasy about changing the registration to something else. The money problem still existed. She had the money for the sealed unit, for the fuel, for resupply of the galley, but she didn't have a spare 100,000 credits, let alone 250,000 for the new license. Another thought occurred, almost as unsettling. She called up the Sabine registration database. Sure enough, to register the ship under the Sabine flag, it would have to undergo a full inspection and pass as sound. She called up those criteria for the ship's size. As she'd expected, the ship would not pass Sabine's very stringent safety inspection, even with all repairs in place. She'd need to install a new communication system, new scans, a more powerful beacon, and the combined cost of these quickly surged past the cost of a Slaughter Key registration. Slaughter Key, on the other hand, required no inspection for off-world registrants. Kai scrubbed at her head with both hands.
Back to square one again. Money. It's always about the money.
Back in her cabin, Kai noticed the stack of mail she'd laid aside the day before. She left Hal's for last, hoping the hammering of her heart would slow before she got to it.
Please, please let it be good.
Aunt Grace wanted to know if she'd eaten the fruitcakes yet, and advised her to cut small, even slices if serving them to friends. Kai thought of the last fruitcake, now in the galley storage, and shook her head. It would be a long, long time before she cut into that one. She could still taste her share of the first two. Cousin Stella sent a brief note of condolence.
Stick it out. Everything passes.
MacRobert's note advised her,
Found a source for equivalent model kits and replacement parts of higher quality than found in most toy stores.
Kai's eyebrows went up at that. She still wasn't sure what Mac intended when he gave her a ship model with communications parts in it. Bond Tailoring had sent notice of a sale, now long past. She wondered why it had been forwarded until she saw her mother's notation alongside one of the illustrated dresses.
It suits you, and they still have your measurements.
And now for Hal.
The envelope enclosed some kind of box. She could see its outline.
Did he send a present?
Her spirits rose. He had understood. He was still her friend, and maybe... She ripped open the envelope and tipped out a little brown leather-covered box she recognized. Her heart stuttered.
It can't be.
She opened it, half hopeful and half afraid. A heavy gold ring, the Academy class ring, its crest battered and scarred, almost unrecognizable. Someone had attacked it with a chisel.
She plucked it from its slot and looked at the inscription. Kailara Evangeline Vada, with a line gouged through it. Her vision blurred. He'd sent it back. He'd sent it back defaced. Kai clamped her jaw shut on the scream that wanted to come out. Her stomach churned. She felt cold and sick and empty all at once. Memory threw up a vivid image of the day they'd exchanged their class rings, the day the rings had been handed out. It wasn't like engagement rings. It had nothing to do with marriage. Though, buried deep, she had a hope that marriage might come to them someday. It was about trust and honor, not money or sex. A ritual begun, their seniors had told them, before Slaughter Key even had a space academy, transferred in by those who founded it. Few cadets exchanged class rings, but she and Hal had been so sure of each other, so sure of their abilities, so sure of their friendship. He had stood there, hazel eyes looking into hers.
It would be an honor, Cadet Vada, to exchange this token with you.
He had asked. She had wanted to, but waited, not willing to pressure him.
And it would be an honor for me.
Formally, they had linked arms and formally passed the boxes hand to hand. And she had considered herself the custodian of his honor as he was of hers. For all that the Academy did not list numerical rank, there were ways of knowing who was at the top. And they both knew they stood number one and number two, and had, sometimes alternating those positions, since their first year. She had taken it seriously, as she took everything seriously. And he had sent her ring back, defaced, scarred, even her name scratched across. She did not need the letter to tell her what he now thought of her. Her hands were shaking. She dropped the ring onto her bunk and unfolded the letter that had come with the box. However bad it was, she had to read it. She had to know why, how he had come to hate her so much. She had understood he might have to cut all ties, never contact her again. She had not imagined that he would turn on her like this. "Ms. Vada," the letter began. Hot tears stung her eyes. She blinked them away, trying not to remember the sound of his voice calling her Kai and Kailara, and once, just once, Kailara Beshi. The letter was even worse than she could have imagined from seeing the ring. She had almost ruined his career, he said, because he had trusted her, because he had believed her lies.
I never lied to you. How could you?
Kai clamped her lips again and kept her eyes on the letter, reading every word that stabbed her with unfair, untrue accusations. Disloyalty, dishonesty, deliberate attempts to sabotage not only his career, but the honor of the service. She had seen him angry before. She knew just how his face would harden, how the muscles along his jaw would swell, the veins throb. It was all too easy to see him writing this letter, nostrils flaring, breath coming fast. Hal's outrage built. From the first cold, formal sentences following the salutation, through a series of increasingly angry dissections of every mistake she had made in the Academy, to a furious conclusion that accused her of seducing Mandy Rocher, an innocent youngster who would never have gotten in trouble if it had not been for her influence. She let the letter fall from her hand when she had read that last sentence, instructing her not to attempt a reply. She felt strangely detached, a vast cold gulf inside her that had once been a warm friendship she'd believed would last forever.
How could it disappear so completely? How could he change that much that fast? Nothing real could change that fast.
He had liked her when they were the best of their year because liking her enhanced him. But what she had felt, that warm attraction, that love, he had not felt. She was a fool, and so were those who had misidentified her problem. It wasn't the lost puppies, the seemingly helpless whom she'd tried to help, who caused her the most trouble. No, it was those who seemed sound and solid, the ones she had trusted because anyone would, the ones she'd considered allies, not victims. She hadn't had rescue fantasies about Hal, or Pazin. Anyone might have believed they were what they appeared. Yet Pazin's apparent goodwill and common sense had been as false as Hal's apparent admiration and affection. Slowly, anger seeped in to replace the shock and horror of Hal's attack. Anger at those who had failed her, lied to her, fooled her. Anger at herself for believing them. She had told herself not to make that mistake again when she'd quit crying about missing her own birthday party. And whatever her family said, however they had misunderstood her motives on other occasions, she had learned. When she looked at her own motives case by case, she had barged in to help others only about as often as anyone decent did. Mostly, she'd been asked to help because, with the family's certainty that helping others was her favorite role, she was the one they turned to. That had to stop. If nothing else came out of Hal's betrayal, she must somehow convince people, her family, others, herself, that she was who she was and not who they thought she was. When she finally fell asleep hours later, something new and hard had replaced both the cold emptiness and the hot anger. The next morning, the day of Gary Tobias's funeral, Kai awoke calm, surprising even herself. The entire crew attended the funeral service. To Kai's surprise, the consul also showed up, just as Kai pressed the button that signaled the start of their service.
My duty. You're looking a bit peaked, Captain. Have you heard anything official from Vada yet?
The Ansibles aren't repaired yet, are they?
Not yet, but we expect them up in a few days. Of course, I keep saying that echoing ISC. Just another few days now. But I'll speak with you after the service.
The service itself was properly Modulan, restrained and cozy at the same time. The recorded voice that read from the Book of Changes and paused for their responses had exactly the right blend of sincerity and calm. Kai eyed her crew. Nobody burst into tears. Nobody looked angry or otherwise upset. The graceful harmonies of Modulan funeral music concluded the service, and then they had 10 minutes to socialize before they had to leave the chapel. Kai didn't know what she felt. Her mind shied away from considering her feelings about Hal, and avoiding those feelings kept her safely remote from the ones about Gary or Skeldon. She concentrated on seeing that everyone else was taken care of. The consul had nothing more to say, really, and left before their time was up. When the warning light blinked, she ushered them all out, where they stood in the corridor as the mourners for the next funeral arrived.
I know what we should do. We should go eat something on station.
Where?
There's this place, Tiny's. Not expensive, close by. Unless the captain wants us back on the ship right away.
Bia looked at Kai. She had no more desire than the rest of them to go back aboard right now.
No, you're right. Let's go eat or something.
She hadn't been on the station except in transit to and from the ship and the shuttle lounge, but Bia would know where to go.
Lead the way.
Tiny's place was packed with spacers, civilian and mercenary. Two tables in the left back corner were empty, and she headed for them. When the crew had settled in, Kai looked at the order display. Prices were listed in Sabine Centras and Universal Credits. No longer 100 centas to the credit. The Sabine currency was shaky, she realized. She'd been paid in credits. They could afford to eat just about anything they wanted.
Get what you want. It's on me.
They nodded. Kai pressed the display to indicate all charges on one check and added the table number of the other table as well. She looked at the menu, mostly shellfish or fish and vegetables in various combinations. Sabine's brackish swamps produced tons of bayhopper and jitterlegs, genetically modified crayfish, the cheapest protein source on the planet. Kai chose a bayhopper goulash and hoped for the best. Her crew followed suit. Nobody ventured to order the outrageously expensive cantaloupe grill. It still felt odd to be here in a place like Tiny's, so obviously a spaceport dive. She'd only been to one the once, tagging along with older cousins and scared she'd be reported to her parents. She looked around and saw no other captains. She was glad she had folded her captain's cape into its carrying pouch. There were men and women in ship suits, casual station clothes, and, in the far corner, uniforms. Mackenzie uniforms. She looked away. She wasn't going to think about the colonel's offer, not now. Their orders had been delivered, and she was just tasting her Bayhopper goulash, quite good, when someone bumped hard into her chair.
You! What are you doing in our place?
Kai swallowed the lump of Bayhopper and twisted her neck to look at the person behind her.
What are you... Ah!
He grabbed her arm.
You're in our place. Them's our tables. Didn't they tell you?
A group of large, rough-looking individuals now stood around her end of the table. Behind them, Kai saw the furtive movement of others slipping away toward the door.
No one mentioned, but there are other empty tables.
Don't want other tables. This is ours. And Latin, too.
The anger Kai had been suppressing edged up her throat.
Too bad. We're here for a funeral dinner, and that's what we're going to have. Sit someplace else.
You stupid bitch!
The man behind her yanked her chair back with her in it and grabbed the front of her uniform, lifting her upright.
You think, 'cause you're a damned officer, you can come in and give orders to people who aren't even in your crew?
His huge fist was drawn back, ready to pulp her face. The anger surged through her. Kai slammed one hand into his throat, ducked away from the possible blow, and jammed her knee into his crotch. She had wanted to hit someone for so long. A second man tried to grab her from behind. She cracked his shin with a heel. Kai reached over someone's shoulder for a bowl of hot Bayhopper goulash and flung it in the face of the man who had just pulled a knife, parrying his suddenly blind stab with the dish itself. Kai punched, rolled, kicked, spun, each time enjoying the solid thwack as her strike hit home. Some of her crew, Bia, Lee, and Quincy, turned out to be good at this too. The others dove beneath the table. The man who'd first grabbed her was coming at Kai with a chair. Kai grabbed one for herself. Then he pulled out something that looked like a cleaver on steroids. A leg of her chair hung from a ragged edge. He grinned.
You'll pay for that.
I doubt it.
At that moment, six bodies in military uniform entered the fray as a unit, just in Kai's peripheral vision on the right.
Advance!
Kai almost recognized that voice. The man lunged at her again, his weapon slashing at another of the chair legs. Kai squatted quickly, trying to come up inside its arc, but his weight overthrew her. She was flat on the floor, the legs of his chair caging her head. But he lost his balance and fell sideways, weapon arm outstretched. Kai rolled toward him and got a hand on his wrist, but he was taller and heavier. She tried to tuck and kick him in the gut, but the chair got in the way. He leered at her and started to roll up when a booted foot landed hard on his hand.
Let go!
Go to hell!
The tip of a very sharp blade came into view beside the boot, resting on the skin of his hand.
You can let go, or I can cut your hand off your blade, finger by finger. Your choice.
His hand loosened. Someone reached down and removed the weapon, but the blade menacing his fingers never quivered.
Captain Vata.
Kai looked up. She knew that face. Master Sergeant Pitt.
Need a hand up?
No thanks.
Kai scrambled up, put the damaged chair back where it had come from, and looked around for her crew. The fight was over. Six men lay or sat on the floor, some unconscious and some merely stunned. Some of her crew were up, breathing hard, and two were still under the table.
Sorry to interrupt your meal, but the dinner conversation seemed to be turning general.
It wasn't our plan. We just had a funeral.
I heard. I'd have come if I could. We missed it by 15 minutes. He was a good man.
He was indeed.
Suddenly, Kai's bruises hurt, her head ached, and she wanted very much to sit down and go to sleep. Not much was left of their meal. The table looked as if someone had wallowed on it, and maybe someone had. Pitt looked down at the man who had attacked Kai.
You're off Marie, aren't you? Not a good choice. Marie crew are supposed to be aboard, waiting for interrogation. I think we'll do a little interrogation on my ship.
Pitt looked at one of the other soldiers.
Jem, call the ship and get him to send a squad.
More quickly than Kai would have imagined, a squad showed up to shackle the attackers and take them away.
Not very good at it, that bunch. Nasty for someone with no training, but you at least knew what you were doing. Come on, let's finish that funeral dinner. Charge the damage to Marie. I'll back you on the damage report.
Kai wasn't sure she could eat anything, but the Bayhopper goulash was just as good the second time around, and the raw whiskey Pitt encouraged her to sip took the ache out of her body.
You know, Captain, you're really wasted on a merchanter.
Kai wasn't sure how she'd ended up sitting next to Pitt, between her and another mercenary.
I know, the Colonel said you have some kind of promise thing you have to do first, but you belong with people like us, really. Not with people like them.
Her gaze settled on the ones who had dived under the table.
Not their fault. They haven't had the training.
Kai's blood warmed to the praise, though, and she felt again both the glee and the guilt as the fight replayed in her mind. Pitt, she realized, would not condemn her for what she'd felt when she killed Payson and his mate.
True, but here's something I don't say often and won't say again. There's some born to it, Captain, and you're one of them. I don't know what happened to get you out of that training, but you're someone I'd be glad to serve with. And I can't say more than that.
Kai was aware of a floating disconnect between her brain and body and hoped she wasn't drunk. Very drunk.
Thanks.
Cup of black coffee and a good big dessert will cure what ails you. We'll just sit here and talk about nothing much. How's that?
And for the next hour, Pitt told stories of the Mackensee Military Assistance Corporation, every one of which made Kai homesick for a community she hadn't had yet. Kai could tell when the alcohol had mostly left her system. She blinked and the lights didn't flicker. She thanked Pitt and led her crew back to the ship. And she stared at the battered circle that had been her class ring and felt nothing but vague anger.
FTL sealed units in. Custom Parts had an Ames in hand and 4311B in stock, and that's better than the one we took out. I've checked all the calibration. It looks slick.
What's the damage?
Only 10% higher than before we left, and it's higher quality. You want it, right?
Kai watched the figures Quincy sent come up on her desk comp.
Right. And the liner?
Got that, too. How's the relicensing coming along?
Paperwork and money.
Kai had her desk comp set to display the falling balance in their accounts. Amazing how fast a lot of money could disappear. She not only had to pay for the registration and the custom ship chip, but for the database search, which ensured that no one else had used the name Gary Tobai for a ship. She had to appear in person to take possession of the new ship chip for the beacon, and then spent a sweaty and uncomfortable half hour getting the beacon unit out, seating the new chip, and replacing the unit in its cramped space. A whole new beacon would have cost another 100,000 credits. Meanwhile, she fended off suggestions from Captain Furman, more like orders than suggestions, that she allow him to audit her books, inspect her ship, check out her financial arrangements with the Sabine branch of Crown and Spears, make arrangements to have the ship scrapped.
For the last time, no. I am not selling the ship for scrap. Here, I have a contract to deliver cargo to Belinta, and that's where I'm going.
But your father...
isn't here, doesn't need to be here. And if he were here, he'd understand my position.
He'd understand Vada Transport's position. Damn it, apprentice!
I'm not an apprentice, Captain Furman. I'm a captain, the same as you are. Get that through your fat, stupid head once and for all!
You little...
She turned off the comm unit, shocked at herself.
Did I really say that to Furman, senior captain of the Vada fleet?
It felt good. It shouldn't feel good. At least he couldn't ping her skull phone, since she didn't have an implant. She had the last word.
Lee, how fast can we leave?
I'll check, Captain.
In a few moments, Quincy appeared on the bridge.
You want to leave soon?
Yes, as soon as we can.
Get us clearance and we're out of here, ma'am. FTL's in, all cavitation damage replaced, cargo loaded and balanced, in-space drive refueled. supplies aboard. Unless there's some niggly paperwork holding us here.
Kai felt a wicked delight bubbling up inside her.
There won't be for long.
They would be on their way, and Furman, she had no doubt, would be stuck where he was until it pleased ISC to let him depart. She called the station master, and in less than 2 hours, they had their clearance for departure. She declined a tug, and in another 17 minutes, 42 seconds, the Gary Tobai eased out of its docking bay, maneuvered carefully free of the station and all near-space traffic, and set a course for the designated jump point. The ship moved as ponderously as ever. She hadn't had the money to upgrade the in-system drive. But it was her ship again, with no strangers aboard, no one giving her orders. On the communications board, messages from Furman stacked up. She could see the mounting numbers with their origin codes, but she didn't care. He couldn't actually do anything, not without getting permission from the ISC, and right now, she had ISC on her side. As for the military ships, they stayed in tight orbit around both planets. Her new scan showed ships out where the Ansibles had been. ISC rebuilding its empire, no doubt. They could stay there till they rotted, all of them. Sabines, mercenaries, ISC, and all, for all she cared. She was free of that. She grinned to herself. She stayed close to the bridge for the first couple of days, then turned it over to the pilots and navigator. If she was going to be a captain, the kind of captain she wanted to be, she needed to trust her people. And she needed to know a lot of things she still didn't know, things a captain needed to know. Without really thinking about it, she fell into a routine similar to that in the academy, beginning every main shift with an hour of physical conditioning and taking another exercise period midway through second shift. She had to be fit. She had to be ready for anything. On the ninth day, they reached the jump point, and she was back on the bridge for NDIM transition. The ship barely shivered as the new FTL drive flung them into indetermination. All the telltales stabilized at once in the correct configuration. Quincy was on the bridge as well, running calibration estimates. A first run with a new drive always involved some tinkering and tweaking, but from the grin on her old face, all was going well. As he'd requested, Gerard Vada had a ping from the watch station as soon as the Sabine Ansibles were back up. He beat Stavros to the communications center by a scant minute. He had just made the connection to the Sabine orbital station when he saw Stavros round the corner. His brother came to the boards and picked up his own headset link.
This is Gerard Vada. Patch me through to the Vada ship Glynis Jones, please.
No such ship is docked at the station. A ship formerly known as the Glynis Jones, but re-registered under the Slaughter Key flag as the Gary Tobai, was here, but is no longer docked and is outside of our range. It may have already left the system.
The Gary Tobai? Kai would have named the ship for Gary only if Gary had died. And if Gary had died, he had died trying to save her. Jerry squeezed his eyes shut and offered a brief prayer, promising more later. Furman was still in the system.
The Katrine Lamont, then.
Katrine Lamont receiving call from Vada HQ, Slaughter Key.
This is Gerard Vada. Patch me through to Captain Furman.
Sir, it's third watch.
And this is an interstellar call. Priority, wake him up.
Captain Furman here.
This is Jerry Vada. What's the situation?
The situation, sir, is that your idiot daughter has stolen a Vada transport ship and gone herring off into jump space. She says she's on the way to Belinta to deliver a cargo, but for all I know, she's on her way to any place you can think of. She hasn't learned one damn thing since she was...
Excuse me. Did you just call my daughter stupid and a thief? Or perhaps I misunderstood your use of the words idiot and stolen.
Sir, I misspoke myself. The fact is, despite my attempts to make her see reason, she refused to come aboard the ship with her crew. Let me sell off that old hunk for scrap and bring her home.
I didn't tell you to do that.
Gerard was calm. He was very calm. That, no doubt, was why Stavros now had a firm hand on his shoulder
and why the techs in the communications center were staring at him wide-eyed.
I told you to give her every assistance to make it clear that she was under Vada protection.
You can't protect someone who's acting like an idiot. I tried to talk sense into her.
That's the second time you've called my daughter an idiot.
I didn't mean it like that. I just meant impetuous, young, headstrong.
You should have known. You had her on her apprentice voyage.
From which she had come back even more determined to enter the academy, he recalled. Furman had done nothing but drive her farther away back then. It wasn't entirely Furman's fault, but Furman was there, handy, and he wanted so much to tack someone's hide to the wall. He closed his eyes, reminding himself of Furman's years of exemplary service.
You're not blaming me, surely. I'm a senior captain in the fleet. I disrupted my own important schedule to come get that her out of the mess she'd gotten herself into.
Stavros's hand tightened on Gerard's arm. He realized that the wash of brightness across his vision was another wave of white-hot anger.
She did not get herself into a mess, Captain Furman. She happened to be in the system when a war started, and she survived until help arrived. I find that commendable. I would find that commendable even if you had done it. I sent you to help her, not scold her, not order her around as if she were still a 13-year-old apprentice. Help her. And what you've done, apparently, is help her go off again without my having a chance to talk to her. And you may have convinced her that she's in trouble with me. Now, you may be one of our senior captains, and you may have an important and lucrative route, but the fact is, Captain Furman, that you are still a Vada Transport employee, and your job description does not include insulting my daughter.
Gerard knew his voice had risen. He knew that Stavros had a hard grip on his arm, and the faces in the communications center were all shocked, and he should get hold of himself. Calm down.
Damn it, man!
That shout brought Gerard back to himself.
If she
didn't come back, if she was lost because the drive failed, because she'd hurried the repair because of Furman, if she'd disappeared into the endless dark reaches of space...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean any harm, I just thought...
Just don't say anything.
Gerard felt sick. All the energy of anger drained away, the emptiness of not knowing hollowing his heart. He had counted on talking to her himself, hearing her voice, proving, if only for the time the call lasted, that she was alive, that he had been told the truth.
Do you want me to follow her to Belinta, make sure she's safe?
Stavros took the headset from him before he could answer. Gerard leaned on the console with both hands, bracing himself upright.
Here's what we need you to do. Clear up all Vada accounts in Sabine. Report in when you've done so. In all likelihood, you will then return to your usual route for the present.
Gerard blinked back the tears, tried not to sniff audibly at the congestion in his nose. He should be happy. She was alive. She had not let Furman bully her. She had gone off to do her duty, fulfill the contract, trade and profit like a true Vada. He could send a message by Ansible to Belinta, telling her he was proud of her. He could reach her while she was there. It was all right now. He could not believe it. He felt in his own heart the avalanche of disasters that had come to her one after another, each one tearing her away from the family, rushing her away out of control to some disastrous ending. She would not come back. If he saw her again, she would be someone else, a stranger, not his daughter, Kylara. A quick cascade of images raced through his mind. Infant, toddler, child, pre-adolescent, teen, young woman. In the future, nothing. Stavros laid a warm hand once more on his shoulder.
Well, she's alive for sure, Arkai.
Gerard couldn't answer. Communications techs busied themselves at their consoles, carefully ignoring the senior officers.
You'll want to leave a message at Belinta. Letter of credit as well.
Will she think it's a bribe? Will she think that not leaving one is a ploy to make her come begging? Does she even need the money?
Everyone needs money, even when they have enough.
A message from me.
Gerard took another breath, picked up a recording cube from the stack on the console.
I can do it, Stav. I'm fine now.
He took the cube into one of the booths they used when they weren't rushing, as he had been, and recorded a short, cordial message to be sent to Belinta, and left it in the queue for her arrival. The days wore on, marked only by ship's time.
Kai updated the captain's log, scribbling in the margins the things she had not had time to put in before. It might be messy, but it would be complete, as she saw it, her log. Some things, though, she did not want to put in. Her account of the mutiny was precise, detailed, and accurate so far as it went. It did not include her feelings. It particularly did not include that wholly unmentionable feeling of utter, absolute, complete glee that had taken over when she killed Pazin, his mate, and Kristoffsen. Oh, she'd thrown up after it was over, and she'd expected that. They'd been told in the academy that most people did after a first killing. But even so, even with the horror and revulsion, she'd been aware of something much worse going on underneath. She had enjoyed it. She had enjoyed the crisis. She had enjoyed the need to make those snap decisions, take that immediate action. And she had enjoyed killing. That did not fit with any of her ideas about herself. Kylara the rescuer, yes. Kylara the brave defender, yes.
What kind of monster am I? Should I join the mercenaries, or my violent tendencies would be under proper control?
Kai felt, except when she tried to feel guilty and bad, quite happy. Almost, though she knew this was dangerous, smugly happy. She had had a horrible few months, starting with that morning at the academy, and yet here she was. People had tried to kill her. She had nearly died. And she was alive, and they, at least some of them, were dead. Hal hated her. Well, that solved any worry about whether she should ever try to contact him. Mandy Rocher was a nasty little piece of work and would get his comeuppance someday. She didn't even care that she might not know about it when that happened. They arrived in Belinta's system 4 days ahead of schedule. That new FTL drive really was superior, and Kai checked in with the Belinta station. She expected a problem because of the beacon change.
Vada Transport, Gary Toe by. Kylara Vada commanding. Request inbound vector to Belinta station.
Gary Toe by, approved vector relaying to your navigator. Captain Vada, you have Ansible messages in queue. Will you accept them now or wait until your arrival?
I'll wait.
One would be her father, no doubt. She told herself she didn't care what he said, but she knew she lied. The ship eased in day after day. Kai reassured the Economic Development Bureau that she had their ag equipment, every single tractor and implement that could be crammed into their cargo holds. She spoke to the Slaughter Key Consul in careful, guarded terms about the situation on Sabine, though with the Ansibles back up, as the station's available list made clear, he could well find out for himself. She made contact with the ISC ship, which was patrolling Belinta's outer reaches, and carefully did not ask if they thought Belinta's Ansible platform was at particular risk. And finally, they arrived, docking neatly at the station. Kai arranged for her escort to meet her at the station downside and for a room at the Captain's Guild. She planned to accept her Ansible mail before talking to Customs, but Customs was already on the horn, demanding her presence. She put on her dress uniform and went out into the dockside area.
Captain Vada, it really is you.
Not just the Customs inspector she'd met before, but two men in the uniform of the Economic Development Bureau.
That's right.
You bought a new ship?
No. We ran into a bit of trouble at Sabine and changed the ship ID chip.
Yeah. You weren't doing anything illegal, were you?
Kai realized suddenly that changing ship chips was the sort of thing pirates did in story cubes.
Not at all. Someone broke into our beacon, stole the original ship chip, and we had to re-register under a new name. I have the paperwork.
Oh. Very well. And the inventory of the imports?
All here. As you'll see, I bought you new equipment from Farm Power.
Why not used?
They aren't selling used there anymore. They've got a war on. The used equipment is all gone. Anyway, all these machines were purchased new on Sabine. I have the inventories ready for you.
Then we can start unloading today.
Not until your payment clears.
You think we would cheat you?
Our contract calls for payment prior to offloading. I'm sorry, but I'm required to adhere to the terms of the contract.
But we have to inspect it.
Of course. I'll escort you to the cargo bays.
There was scarcely room to move in the cargo bays, with disassembled pieces of equipment stowed carefully to make the most use of the available cubage. Kai had to use a hard copy of the inventory, but the EDB personnel had implants to compare the visible serial numbers.
How long will it take to unload this?
I don't know. My cargo master was killed in the trouble over near Sabine.
Brawling in a bar?
No. Taken as hostage by a pirate who had been interned on my ship and killed when I suppressed the mutiny. That's why I renamed the ship for him. I consider him a hero.
Oh. Sorry. But how long did it take to load?
Without Gary, 3 days. It was already disassembled, though.
Kai felt tired even before she started, but gave a quick and incomplete recital of what had happened, at least as far as the cargo was concerned.
You mean it was out there in space, unprotected, for days and days?
It was in the same kind of vacuum it would have experienced in any cargo ship's hold. Farm Power assured me that there was no need to keep the holds aired up or at livable temperature during transport. And I also have their assurance that ambient radiation while outside the ship would not shorten the working life.
Kai was glad Quincy had thought to ask for that.
Now, as soon as the credits are in my account, you can start unloading.
They dithered another hour or so, but finally authorized the transfer of the agreed amount into her local account, payable without tax, in credits. Kai handed over the inventory, told Quincy to supervise the unloading crews, and at last had time to look at her accumulated messages. As expected, there was one from her father. A full broadband audio-visual that must have cost... She didn't want to think. She settled down in her cabin, braced for the worst.
Kailara, I'm so sorry.
Her eyes filled with tears despite herself. Her father looked exhausted and distraught.
Furman is an idiot, and I wouldn't have sent him if anyone else had been close enough. He was supposed to help you, not cause you more trouble. I'm sorry Gary died. I haven't heard all about it yet, but I'm sure he died trying to help you in some way. I know you were injured. Kai, I hope you know that Vada were trying to do everything we could to find you, help you, whatever happened. All I know now is that you must be at Belinta to have accessed this message. Kai, please call me. I've set up a prepaid call. You may not need that option, but just in case. Please. Please call me anytime.
Not the worst, then. Not angry, not like Furman. But Kai didn't want to call home like a teenager who'd gotten herself in a fix and has to call Daddy for help. She had coped with the fix. She had coped with death, with injury. She didn't need him that way. But he needed her. That tremor in his voice, those circles under his eyes, were not faked. She went to the bridge and placed the call, using her own now fatter account. This time, the telltale switched promptly from standby to ready to searching to active connection. A brief delay, with a screen message of reconnecting mobile unit. That meant he had the skull phone on. He answered immediately. The visual was a bouncing green blur, what the skull phone's visual pickup faced.
Yes?
Dad, it's Kai.
A final blur. Then motion stopped. The pickup stared at what she could now see was one of the back roads in a tick grove.
Kai, are you all right?
The combination of eagerness and pleading in his voice saddened her.
I'm fine, Dad. I'm at Belinta's orbital station. You knew that. You left the message.
Yes, you made it. Not that I didn't think you would, but...
Only a few weeks ago, it seemed, she had been glad to lean into him, feel his comforting arm around her. Now it felt awkward. And not only because he was light years away. Other kinds of years away, maybe.
I don't know what you've heard about what happened.
Not enough. Not nearly enough. I knew you'd gone rogue. Quincy's probably told you by now. We expected something like that on one of your early voyages.
Yes, she and Gary. I knew on the way to Sabine. But they thought it was all right.
Of course. Trade and profit. I was glad for you. It meant, I thought, that you weren't completely shattered by what the Academy did.
Well... The FTL sealed unit failed on downshift into Sabine.
It was supposed to be safe. Quincy swore that ship was safe enough for you.
Not her fault. Something she couldn't anticipate. We think it's because there was no cargo on the way to Sabine. We wanted maximum cubage for the pickup. Cargo mass had been damping what was going wrong. Captain's decision.
All right.
So then, I was having trouble getting financing for both the equipment and the repairs, and the political situation was getting worse. I was actually trying to call you when the Ansibles went out.
You were? Good girl.
He should have known that. Kai pushed from her mind the reluctance she'd had to call for help.
I'd have reached you too, but the Captain's Guild wouldn't let me put the call through because they wouldn't charge the Vada account.
What?
I'd done the Belinta deal as a private contract, not to risk Vada transport image if something went wrong. Besides, my instructions were to take the ship from Belinta to Leonora to Lastway. I didn't know if... Well, what would happen if...
We have the highest rated category of account at the Captain's Guild. Damn them! They have no reason. Didn't you tell them who you were? Not that it should make a difference. Any Vada captain should be able to...
Dad, I told them who I was, and it made no difference. But a war was starting. Maybe that was it.
They'll hear from me, from us. Sorry, Kai. But when I think how scared we were, if we'd gotten that message, at least I'd have known.
Well, the excitement all came later.
Before he could reply, Kai told him what had come next. That she had broken the ship free of the station, moved away from the planet to await events, been hailed and then boarded by mercenaries. After briefly wondering how much to tell about her injuries, she told him as little as possible. She was fine. She talked quickly, keeping the recital clean and lean, as she'd been taught at the academy. The new contract, the arrival of hostages, the mercenaries' departure, her decision to cut rations, the mutiny.
That's when Gary was killed, right?
Yes.
Kai wanted, she didn't want, to tell him the details. If she told it all, she was terrified of what he would think of her, his daughter, his own child, who could stand by and see a friend killed, and then kill, not once, but repeatedly. She certainly couldn't tell him about the discovery, at once terrifying and exhilarating, that she had enjoyed killing.
It must have been hard, Kai. I'm sorry you had to face that kind of thing. I'm so glad you lived, that you saved the rest of your crew. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. I can't talk about it right now.
I understand.
He didn't understand. He couldn't understand. Kai wondered suddenly if he, the big, warm, safe father she had grown up with, had ever seen anyone die, had ever killed someone.
I have to ask. Your Aunt Gracie Lane wants to know if you've eaten all the fruitcakes yet.
Fruitcakes. Aunt Gracie Lane must be the most single-minded person in the entire universe if she knew anything about what had happened and was worrying about those hideous fruitcakes.
Two of them, Dad. We shared them out during the... when we were stretching the food supply.
You still have the third? You know it would make her really happy and get her off my back if I could assure her that you had finished all three. She keeps after me about it, telling me to remind you to serve them in thin, ladylike slices.
Kai tried not to roll her eyes, hard as it was.
All right. I'll tell you what. We'll have it today. As soon as the cargo's offloaded, I'll tell the crew we're having a party, and we'll serve Aunt Gracie's fruitcake.
Some of them actually liked the horrible stuff.
Cut it yourself, she tells me.
All right, I'll cut it myself. And I'm sending you a written report. About Gary's funeral and so on, and some paperwork on the contract.
That's fine. Look, I can see by the status line that you're making this call out of your own pocket. But remember, you've got credit for a call to me anytime.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
And when you know what your plans are, please let me know.
Kai had no idea what her plans were. She had cargo for Leonora and Lastway, but most of it was spec.
I'll let you know. Goodbye, Dad.
Farewell, Kai Lara. You're always in our hearts.
Traditional. And she was blinking back tears as she cut the connection.
So now what?
The Belinta Station cargo handlers were unloading. She could plan the party and then, next day shift, go planetside and see what there was to see.
It's not that bad, Kai.
Aline, Mihar, and Lee nodded.
I've always liked fruitcake.
All right. I wouldn't make you eat it, but if you want to, and I did promise my father that we'd cut it today.
Kai put the fruitcake, even heavier than the first two, she thought, on a cake plate, and got out the cake knife and cake fork. each embossed with the Vata transport seal. Before, they had just cut off hunks and weighed them. But now she put the fork into the cake and poked the tip of the knife in. Hard, dense, difficult. The blade slid down, reluctantly, it seemed, and stopped. Kai pressed harder. Nothing happened. She moved the blade over and tried again.
Has Aunt Gracie's vision failed? Did she put in gravel instead of dried fruits and nuts?
This time, the tip of the blade wouldn't go all the way in. Kai wiggled it around, and suddenly it sank to the plate. That slice worked. She moved over, away from the first attempt, and cut and removed a thin sliver, the thickness Aunt Gracie would approve. Brown, speckled with green and red and yellow, and something that looked like a dirty piece of glass. Kai poked it with the knife, prodded it loose, and it fell onto the cake plate.
Oh, a holiday cake! It's got little presents in it!
Mihar picked up the object, wiped it off with a napkin, and they all stared. Gleaming, flashing, the faceted object lay in her hand. Several carats of blue-white diamond, perfectly cut.
Holy! Whatever!
Mihar tipped the stone back onto the plate. The crew froze, staring at Kai. There were, in all, a kilo of diamonds in that fruitcake, most of them over 2 carats, and a letter, stained by cake batter, but quite legible.
My dear Kailara, I'm quite well aware that you do not like my fruitcakes. Therefore, I knew you would not hog them down at once, and this little surprise would be available when you truly needed it. Best wishes, your loving Aunt Grace.
Kai stared at the diamonds, then at the faces of her crew.
What do we do now?
Quincy gathered some of the bits and pieces onto her plate.
Eat the fruitcake, and tell your aunt it was delicious.
Vata's War, Trading in Danger, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2003, Elizabeth Moon. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Barbara Pinellini, Jonathan Watkins, Lily Beacon, James Lewis, Andy Clements, Joe Brack, David Coyne, Tim Getman, Stephen Carpenter, Tom Simpson, Colleen Delaney, Christopher Grayville, Michael Glenn, Terrence Aselford, Michael John Casey, Sonny Lasky, Mort Shelby, Yasmin Toison, Eric Messner, Thomas Penny, Casey Platt, Dylan Lynch, James Konacek, Laura Quinn Anderson, Ken Jackson, and Richard Rowan. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. Book adapted for graphic audio by Wilson T. Ferrier. If you enjoyed Vada's War, be sure to look for Rogue Angel, available at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net.
What is your name?
Anya Creed.
I see.
Who are you?
My name is Agamemnon. We have your passport here.
They took it from me when I was kidnapped.
We will videotape your beheading and then broadcast it all over the world.
Beheading?
Are you afraid to die?
I faced death before.
I will kill you!
Don't move. Who are you?
My name is Anya Creed. The Abu Sayyaf kidnapped me several days ago. I have no idea where I am.
You live here, or you just
passing through?
Gunnery Sergeant Vic Gutierrez, United States Marine Corps.
Something bothering you, Vic?
I got this feeling like someone's keeping an eye on us.
Excuse me!
What happened?
Anya, wake up and pay attention.
Where are we?
You are in a cavern located far beneath the surface of the jungle. You're wasting your time. You would need to be a lot stronger than you are in order to break free. Besides, you are to be sacrificed to our god.
I don't believe you.
Very well. You believe now, don't you?
Oh, great.
Oh, crap.
Rogue Angel 18. Sacrifice. In graphic audio. If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net.